Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode SP19, interview with Dave the Bard and Kerry Lee. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. So let's give you the ever-important contact details. If you want to chat, you may catch us on Twitter or Facebook or MySpace or in our forums. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can send us an email to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com, or you can contact us by calling Skype, Celtic Myth Pod Show, all one word, and leaving us a message.
Great. Before we make a start on today's show, which features a fabulous interview with Celtic folk singer, songwriter Dave the Bard, and partner, the multi-talented artist Kerry Lee, let's have some news and views. History is to be made on Saturday, May the 1st this year, as one of the world's oldest recorded festivals is rekindled at the Hill of Wisnech in County Westmeath in Ireland, and over two dozen sites across the nation. Wisnech is part of the ancient Tara complex and the spiritual home of all Irish Celts. Originally known as Beltane, this summer festival was an important fixture on the worldwide calendar, attracting attendees from the four corners of the ancient world. Having not been officially celebrated in hundreds of years, the festival is to return, rising from the ashes of the Beltane name as Festival of the Fires. It promises to be an event unlike anything ever witnessed in modern times, and it is an iconic national celebration to truly ignite the summer.
One of the ceremonial highlights of the festival will be the lighting of a national fire, ignited first on the summit of Wisnech, and then carried to hilltops in every one of Ireland's 32 counties. In ancient times, this sacred Wisnech fire was the catalyst for coast-to-coast celebrations, with festivals and gatherings taking place in the fire sites and in the communities below.
Wisnech, the exact centre point and one of the most historic and sacred sites in the Western world, is a truly unique festival site. The true seat of the High Kings of Ireland is an expanse which incorporates some 40 ancient ruins, walkways and souterrains, as well as the world-famous Catstone, the birth and resting place of the goddess Eriu, after whom the island is named. It's also the point where the four provinces meet.
We'll be bringing you more information about this incredible revival of an ancient custom in our blog. But if you can't get to Ireland to help celebrate, and you can't light a fire to echo the fires across Ireland, then at least light a candle in celebration. We certainly will be.
We will. And now on to our amazing interview with Dave the Bard and Kerry Lee. This is a new type of show for us, and we hope you like it.
Yes. Dave and Kerry popped into our studio just recently, and were kind enough to have a chat with us. We hope that in the future we have a chance to chat to other people in the Celtic or Fae field as well, and we can bring you a different sort of show.
Yeah, that'll make a nice change now and then.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, let's get on with the show. We really hope you enjoy this interview as much as we did recording it. So shall we start with one of Dave's tracks to get us in the mood?
Yes. Let's listen to Twa Corbies.
As I was walking all alone, I heard two ravens cry and moan. to the other did say, oh, where shall we go and dine today, oh, where shall we go and dine today? Out behind that old high dike, I know there lies a murdered knight. No one knows that he lies there, oh, his hawk and his hound and his lady fair, oh. His hawk and his hound and his lady fair.
Was Twa Corbis from Dave's latest album, Tales from the Crowman. We're really privileged to welcome Dave the Bard and his partner, Kerry Lee the Artist, into the Celtic Myth Podshow studio. Hello, Dave. Hello, Kerry.
Hello.
Yeah, wonderful to have you here. Wonderful.
It is.
Great to be here.
It's great to be in this forest grove with the birds tweeting nicely.
You can just hear them in the background if you listen really gently, can't you?
Yes.
Yeah, can you feel the heat of the sun?
Yeah, it's upon us. Height of summer somewhere.
Do you know, the listeners actually know what it looks like in this studio, so they really do know that we're sweating. We wanted to ask you a couple of questions, Dave. Is that okay?
Yeah, a couple's fine.
A couple. Stop us if it's too much.
And Kerry, feel free to chip in.
Thank you.
I will.
Dave, I've heard people called you Dan the Bard.
Mm-hmm.
Doch the Bard.
Doch, I've never Doch. Heard that one.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah, Doch yeah. the Bard. Doch,
yeah.
And even Dave the Bad, which amused me somewhat.
That's my alter ego, Dave.
But your name is spelt D-A-M-H, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how do you pronounce it, really?
Okay, officially, it's Darv.
Darv.
D-A-R-V, like that.
Right.
And it's Scots Gaelic for stag. That's what it means. And it came from a point where I was looking for a bardic name, and I wanted something to describe. And I went through all of the usual kind of magical names that lots of people look at. And I had a copy of the Druid Animal Oracle by Stephanie and Philip Cargill.
Oh, well, the cards.
The cards, yeah.
Wonderful
cards. That's it. And the deer has always been my totem animal.
I was just going to say, do you relate to the stag as a totem?
Absolutely.
Kind of,
the deer is the one for me.
Yeah.
I love lots of animals, and the deer isn't necessarily my favourite animal. It's probably a dog, to be honest.
Deer make such a mess on the carpet.
That's right, they don't bring back balls. And I saw this card, and the artwork was by Will Worthington, and there it was, and underneath it had the word Darv, and my name is Dave.
Yeah.
And it suddenly clicked that actually I already have my bardic or magical name.
Already there.
It's already there. I just pronounced it differently. So although it's pronounced Darv, I am Dave the Bard, and I just spelled Dave with an M-H at the end. So it's
superb.
Actually, the weird thing is Darv, D-A-M-H, also means ox. And it also means bard.
And does it?
Yes.
In which language?
In Gaelic. In Gaelic.
Good Lord.
You know, if you look up the meaning on t'internet.
On internet, aye.
Yeah, you'll find that it means stag, it means ox, and it means bard. So I'm actually Bard the Bard.
Bard the Bard. Now, that's one I haven't heard.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. I had no idea that they were those connections.
Kerry, do you have an animal that you associate with more than any other? A kind of a totem animal?
Yes, I think if the more I the more I kind of travel on this path, the more the corvids basically as a as a group.
That's crows and magpies.
Yes, very much.
Which
so.
Which we know from our stories relates to the Morrigan and the crone aspect, perhaps. And
there's a lot of healing involved with working with these birds. I mean, they tend to get in there and dig around in the stuff that we would find pretty gruesome and grim, but they tidy up and they clean
the place and they
keep the place running and healthy.
So it's almost like a form of healing in a way, really.
That's how I feel about working with their energy, definitely, yeah.
They absolutely. Certainly do cleanse a battlefield.
Yes, thankfully I haven't seen that, but I've heard.
Yes. A lot of your music is written about things to that really relate to us, Celtic mythology.
Yes.
When did that start?
When I was born, I'd have to say. because I was born in Cornwall. And I was born in Redruth, and we lived in a little village called Deveron, which is between Falmouth and Truro. And we moved away when I was really early, early on in my life, because I had asthma, and the doctors said that it was the damp air of Cornwall that was the cause.
Of course, the further west you go in the UK, the wetter it gets.
That's it. The ironic thing is, whenever I go to Cornwall, I don't have any asthma, you know.
Strange, isn't it?
And what happened is we moved away, but we went back every year ever since for holidays and to see, people down there that we knew and stuff. And you know, I mean, Cornwall is a county and many would say a country.
Sure, a nation,
is,
definitely.
Yeah, that's right. Is just, you know, enshrouded in mist, I mean, of mythology. You've got stone circles there, you've got the ancient sites, you've got the, you know, the old Iron Age settlements.
Yes.
You've got the connections with King Arthur, with Merlin.
Absolutely.
You've got the moors and the wildness there. And I'm definitely a child of granite rather than, you know, anything else. And so, you know, I grew up feeling actually very special. I went to a school in Sussex, but I was Cornish, you know, and I've always been very proud.
Did you have the accent?
No, I never got the accent.
Oh, what a shame.
And do you speak any Cornish?
I tried. I did try and learn Cornish, but, you know, you need to be in Cornwall to talk to it, you know, to talk to other people. And,
I don't think there's that many native speakers left now, sadly.
It's growing, actually.
That is such good news.
Yeah, there's more and more people in Cornwall learning the language, and we did try, and it's very similar to Welsh. For instance, the word Gorseth is a Cornish word because they have the Gorseth of bards in Cornwall as well.
And the word Gorseth means?
Gorseth means high seat, druidic high seat, basically, or bardic high seat. And whereas the Welsh will spell it with a double D at the end and have that soft, you know, the Cornish spell it like an English word. So it's T-H, so it's G-O-R-S-E-T-H is Gorseth. So you'll find a lot of the words similar, but the spellings are different. So I guess you could learn Welsh and have a conversation with someone.
They're both actually what they call Brythonic.
That's it.
Breton apparently has got some similarity to Welsh and Cornish as well.
I'm sure. But that was it. I mean, you know, the mythology is in the blood at the end of the day.
Brilliant. And you couldn't avoid it, could you?
No, it was there.
No.
It was knocking on my door all the time, really.
So what inspired you to put together Hearn's Apprentice, which I think was your first album, wasn't it?
It was my first solo album.
Tell us more.
No, there is a little known album that came out before. I only sold about 200 copies. I formed a band called Spiral Castle. And that album was called None But Seven. And Spiral Castle formed because I was offered a concert supporting Robin Williamson.
Oh, what?
Wow.
That's my first solo kind of concert. And I just
you'd have to go for that, wouldn't
I said,
you?
No. I said, Robin, take... No, no, okay, of course.
Do I believe that?
No.
No, I don't. No.
You know, it's a dream, you know, because he was a hero of mine anyway.
Yeah, me too.
But I'd also got one of those little kind of Fostex tape decks, four-track tape decks, you know. And I'd started to record some of the songs, like Noon of the Solstice, that was later on... Spirit of Albion and things like that, and they sounded not bad as a band, and I thought what I need is to play with a few people. So and you know, we're very blessed in the kind of pagan community and spiritual community in Sussex to have some really good musicians as friends. So Spiral Castle was formed on a drunken haze one sort of winter New Year's Eve with four mates getting together. And we played the gig with Robin Williamson, and then we were asked to play other gigs and things like that. And then people said, "Are you going to record an album?" So we recorded this CD number seven, and that was the first one. But then what happens with bands, and why I'm no longer in a band, is that it became harder and harder to get four people in the same place
at the same time.
And I really wanted to go with this, you know. I could feel this is where my life was taking me. And you know, so the Spiral Castle kind of gradually, you know, went into the other world.
And I
found that I was we were due to record a second album, and a good number of Hearn's Apprentice were written while I was still within Spiral Castle.
Brilliant!
But I was getting creative constipation.
I know.
So basically, I'd written so many songs, and there was a point where I got so many songs written that I couldn't write any more until those songs had been recorded. Do you know what I mean? That they had to be finished, and they, you know. And so I started to record Hearn's Apprentice while Spiral Castle were kind of like in their last sort of throes, if you like. And then that stopped happening completely, and I had an album pretty much ready and raring to go as a Dave Vibard solo album, like straight away.
Did you find that modern technology, the multi-tracking capabilities of computer software now, has really helped you?
Blessed be Logic Studio.
All bow down.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great, you know. And I always, you know, I loved Mike Oldfield's way of doing things, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing him on Blue Peter. when I was a kid.
Yes, I remember.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, they showed him putting together the new Blue Peter thing, how he was laying the tracks over and over. And I, even then, I thought, I could do that.
You know, I could do that.
It's easy, yeah.
It's a job, I could do that.
Yeah. So there you go, yeah.
There you go. Kerry, have you found, because your artwork's astounding.
Oh, bless
it. It really is. No, it is. Mm. It is. And you cover so many media. That's what amazes me.
Because I'm too restless. I can never stick at one thing.
You do pottery, you do painting, you do drawing. But have you ever suffered from creative constipation?
Yes, for most of my life. I have more ideas than I can actually put into a physical form. And the problem is focusing. I get obsessed with ideas.
Sure.
And I get completely taken over by the idea. And if I can't immerse myself utterly in it and complete a project, I won't even start it.
Really?
And then if I don't actually get to it, it dies, and it's almost like I have to mourn it. And, yeah, so many things have happened where I don't have the time or I don't have the opportunity to actually...
So do you mean that if you can't see the ending of an idea, you won't start that project? Mm.
There's no point, because I will take that idea, I will immerse myself in it, I will research as much as research can be done on something that's a feeling often, find out how I want it to actually be, and then have to kind of slightly let go of that because of my obsessional idea of how I want it to be.
Sure.
It's never going to be how it actually is at the end.
That's the curse with art, though, isn't it?
It really is.
I mean, you must find that with music, don't you? You're never ever fully satisfied with something you've made.
No, there comes a point where you just have to move away from
it. You do, don't you?
It's the bane of being creative.
I mean, the same with us making the shows, the same frustration. Yeah.
Very much.
So do you start a project and then realise halfway through... I can't say that.
Blow it.
Gosh darn.
Oh dear. So do you start a project and realise halfway through that you can't finish it and you think, oh, now what do? And get frustrated and...
I have done on many occasions, particularly, you know, in the past when I had young children and the demands were more important.
Absolutely.
As my children got older and I have, you know, more freedom of personal kind of time, I can allow myself to be immersed in it until 3 a.m. and kind of work for a week or 2 weeks
where
I don't think about anything else. I don't do the washing up. I don't look at the dog and go, I'm going to do your dinner.
Fab, I'm moving in with Kerry.
I forget everything else and lose myself in the project. And that's the only way I can work, because if I don't get to the end of it, there isn't any way for me personally of going back to it. The energy has to run its course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just doesn't work for me afterwards.
Isn't that the wonderful thing about getting old, though?
Your kids grow up and leave home. Oh, no.
No, but I mean, your main job when you're younger is your family.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And as you get older, you suddenly realise that, you know, you've got your own heart, soul and independence. And
you can do your thing.
And you can do your thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dave, who are your major influences in the music world?
Wow.
That came out of nowhere, didn't it?
I had a feeling you might say something like that.
I've had loads, to be honest, over the years. I think that when it comes to music, I'm not a great fan of music that to me is like modern art. Mm-hmm. It's the musical equivalent to the Turner Prize, if you know what I mean. I don't get that kind of music. What I like is a hook. I like a melody, and I like a chorus that makes you want to sing along to. And so I, you know, to me, my greatest influences are, I guess, but it's, I would say, even like AC/DC. I loved, and I still do, they're still my favorite rock band, and if you listen to their songs, you cannot help but but either sing along or sure. tap your foot or
yeah,
anything like that.
They are foot tapping, aren't
yeah,
they?
I mean, my dad weaned me on people like the Rolling Stones.
Sure.
Oh, yes.
And then also, I mean, if you can, I think if you, I don't, you don't have to listen too deeply to also hear that, you know, my dad was a, and still is a huge John Denver fan.
Yes. Yeah.
And I, you know, when you look at the way that John Denver creates his songs, you can hear where I got my inspiration from. I mean, you know,
you can hear it, and yeah, I've actually yeah. noticed it because I'm quite a John Denver fan.
You
so
are. Yeah.
so having this, I'm like, yeah. there's something familiar here, you know. And,
yeah. So it really is the hook. It's mm. it's if I am writing a song and it doesn't make me want to sing it,
sure,
I don't progress it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't write.
It has to be one of those you find yourself singing when you're yeah. walking up the road.
Yeah, I don't do fillers for yeah. albums. You know, every sure. single song has to be one that moves me personally. And I would have to go out and buy it. If mm. I wouldn't, if I didn't think that about my music, I wouldn't ever, you know, sure. play it to anyone else.
Yeah. And I think our listeners would agree. They've definitely got a hook. We'll find ourselves singing them.
Yeah, well, there you go. And later on, I mean, more recently, the two influences that have been a big part of my life have been Doogie McLean
mm-hmm.
And Show of Hands, Steve Knightley.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those two songwriters have also, you know, kind of helped me hone my kind of direction skills. So if your listeners know of these people, they'll go, oh, yeah, I can see that. And if they sure. don't, get on iTunes, have a listen. You
know, absolutely.
Yeah. the latter includes me. Oops. Kerry, do you find yourself singing his songs?
Particularly when he's recording.
Yes.
Because you hear them so many times.
In so many different ways. And there are times when you just go, shut up. If I hear that song once more,
I'm going to throttle you.
Murder. And the dog and I have to creep around the house. And our dog is a border collie and barks at everything.
So dogs aren't terribly good at creeping, are they?
No. No, they're not. She's
in fact,
not.
If you listen to some of my songs, you can hear my dog in the back.
If the phone rings or if the door goes, I'm running around. We actually need like the old-fashioned red and green lights on the outside of the door so that we know when he's actually recording.
Sure.
I want one of those.
Of course you do.
On air. I want one of those.
You see, when Kerry's doing her artwork, it's a nice quiet thing, and we can watch the TV or something like listen mm-hmm. to music. And
this is you and the dog.
And Kerry, you know, and her kind of like moments of despair are literally just pushing the table away, going, "That's terrible," and then bring it back. And whereas, of course, music, you know, you have to hammer an instrument. It's a little, you can't do
it's
that.
It's more dramatic.
Yeah, that's right. You know, yeah, it's one of those things.
With your inspiration, though, Dave, a lot of it is so related to Celtic mythology. This is what excites us.
Mm.
In particular, you did this amazing series, the Bloody Oath.
Oh yeah,
series.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why those? What inspired
those?
You there?
Well, I, like many people, went to school and thought our history started with the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out that there was more to this island and that it had its own mythology, I was really kicked by that. The idea was amazing. And so, you know, bought a copy of the Mabinogion, which, you know, some of the versions are quite a hard read. The Lady
they
Charlotte
are.
Guest one I find
they
particularly
are.
Hard. But there was one called a Geoffrey Gantz, I think it was a Penguin version that had a bit more regular language. And then I heard a tape of Professor Ronald Hutton doing an audiobook version of the Mabinogion.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and I was a sales rep at the end at that time. So in between calls, I was just listening endlessly to this tape, to the point where I could tell the whole thing, you know, around a campfire. And one of the stories that really just touched me more than all the others, I think, was the story of the Fourth Branch, and the story of Blood Eyewith. Thank you.
to the water. Tell me, what do you see? I see a woman of flowers crying out to be free. I see a goddess, a woman in a circle of trees. I see Meth and Gwydion fall to their knees. Welcome, May Queen. Sing for her now. For as the year turns to Samhain, she'll return as an owl. Blood, I wear the owl. Watch over your land. Hear the call of a hunter. Call him into your hands. He is dark, he is handsome, and the king is away. Gronu says he must go now, but you ask him to stay. Ask him to stay. Welcome, May Queen. Sing for her now. For as the year turns to sour, but I wear the owl. She can't live without him. So while the king is away, they plot to kill him. Running river came the spear from Gronu, and the eagle it flew. Welcome, May Queen. Sing for her now, for as the year turns to sour, but I wear the owl. My son, where are you? For only I see an old rotting eagle that grows between two banks. Darkened is the sky and hills. Shall I not know by your wounds that this is a lie? Oh,
oak that grows on upland ground? Is it not wetted by the rain? Has it not been drenched by 90 tempests? It holds in its branches high flower gefäß. This night, for your wife is a bird now, she will never see light, cursed to hunt in the night. Welcome, May Queen, sing for her now. She'll return as an owl. Welcome, May Queen. Sing for her now. For as the year turns to summer, she'll return as an owl. Blood, I will.
That was Blood I Weth from Herne's Apprentice.
There's more to it to me, and there always was far more to it than the story. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to it, you can see messages of agriculture, of even star law, you know, the way that Hlai Hlaugafess is only killed with one foot on a cauldron and one on a goat. Well, if you look at that, it's the Cancer and
the Capricorn.
Equinoxes,
sure.
You know, and all things like that, that time of balance and things like that. And within that, of course, is Blood I Weth, who I, up until that point, I've been reading a fair number of books, and all of the books and all of the divination decks had all symbolized her with the word betrayer.
Sure.
Which is actually unfair, isn't
and
it?
And I
really?
Thought very that unfair. Is rubbish.
Yeah.
You know,
can we stop for a second and have a quick 30-second summary of the story? Because some of our listeners might not know it.
Right. Okay. Wow. you do it.
Blood I Weth is the Lady of Flowers, isn't she?
Yes.
And she's created as a wife for Hlai Hlaugafess, mm-hmm. because he is yeah. cursed not to take mortal wife.
That's right, by Arianrhod.
By Arianrhod. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is that she falls for another, or she has... Mm. desires for another.
Yeah.
And
essentially what you've got here is if you could say that Blood I Weth is formed for someone she's never met.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, which it may be the Child of Light, it may be Hlai, it may be the Sun God, you know, but essentially she doesn't know who he is, and she is conjured by Gwydion and Math by, you know, using the oak broom and meadow sweet in the grove. And she steps forward and becomes the wife, not of a human, you know, not of humanity. And I thought, well, I've always thought that she was a bit cleverer than that. And if you look at a lot of the god tales, they have one envy of us as mortals, and that is our nerve endings.
Mm-hmm.
That is our skin and the way we feel and the way we touch and at that sensuous side of humans, of animals. You know, the gods don't have that. And I think she wanted that feeling. I think that she did come through that direction and was formed. But when she met Hlai, obviously, it didn't quite do it for her, you know.
No.
And along comes Gronu Pebir, who is the dark one, the hunter. And that got her moving, you know.
Yep.
Far more.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. Yeah.
It's moving rapidly on.
But you see, because of that magical element, I can't see that as a betrayal. I see that as her showing her free will.
Yeah.
you know, and saying that actually, thank you for creating me, but now I'm going over there. Thank you very much.
Yes.
You know, this is what I'm really here for. Yeah.
I'm really, really glad you've said that, because when we get to that tale, it's going to give our listeners an alternative interpretation and an alternative view of the traditional tale.
And she's the and she's the only goddess that I can find that goes from maiden to crone with no motherhood in the centre. She is the maiden of flowers.
Yeah.
And then later on in the story, as a curse, she is changed into an owl by Gwydion for doing what she did to Hlai. Mm-hmm. So she becomes the May Queen, and she's the Samhain owl. Mm-hmm. But she's not a mother during any of her period of time of mm-hmm. life. And again, you know, within that story, you have that seasonal wheel of the year with, you know, embodied in her as a goddess.
Yeah,
and she became really important to me, and for a long time, and she still is with me now. But certainly through those albums, she was my muse. She was the voice that I heard at the time.
Beautiful.
So those stories, and the third one in that trilogy, The Cloak of Feathers. That story is that the person is it's me.
So the Cloak of Feathers is associated with a shamanic figure, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's kind of a transformational.
That's right, but it's set very much in our modern age, you know, and it's out at my window, calling from the tree, I hear your voice in the cool moonlight, do you sing those words for me? And it's her telling the story to us now, and to say, this is how it really was.
Brilliant. You
know, yeah.
Brilliant stuff. And that, I don't think I'll ever listen to those particular tracks in the same way again, actually. Kerry, is there a goddess that inspires you?
Ceridwen. Mm-hmm. Without question, she...
And she's one of the Welsh goddesses, isn't she?
She is. She's a very, very powerful goddess of initiation and inspiration. And through the journey, the story, which is included in the Mabinogian book by Lady Shark Guest, but isn't actually part of the Mabinogian itself, is a very, very powerful story of initiating a young boy through the shamanic process to become the most perfect bard.
This is Gwion, who later Gwion becomes Taliesin.
Yes, later becomes Taliesin and a gift to the world.
Yeah.
And it is through Ceridwen's brewing of the Arwen for her other son, Avakli, who is ugly and unhappy and rejected by the world, and she wants to give him a gift of poetry and beauty, and so that he will be a boon to the world, which accidentally comes, or not accidentally, comes to Gwydion.
Now, she brews this in a cauldron, doesn't she?
She does, indeed. She does, and the whole cauldron is set for a year and a day, and all of the herbs she goes out and she collects, and magical incantations, and she sets Gwion and Morda to watch the cauldron and to keep it stirring, to keep the fire burning. And there are three drops from this cauldron which contain the magic of the Arwen. And whoever takes of those three drops will know all that is, all that has been, and all that will be. And that is what Avakli is supposed to get.
Sure.
And instead it goes to Gwion.
Gwion gets splashed with the three drops, and what's left in the cauldron is essentially poison, and the cauldron breaks and poisons the river and kills horses, and it's all very dreadful.
Oh, I didn't know all that.
Do you not know?
No.
The story is fantastic, but the whole thing is so amazing. The chase, there's a shamanic chase of shapeshifting.
The shapeshifting chase is so famous, isn't it?
It's awesome and amazing. The whole story is fantastic, but it is a coded story about training and initiation and the work that goes through. And also there's a message in there that, you know, magic, you can
create it, but you can't direct it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly right.
Mm. Yes. Mm. The other thing I was going to say, Kerry, is how does she appear in your artwork? Is there a piece of artwork you would say that was Ceridwen? That, do you have one? I've put you on the spot now, haven't I?
Yeah. It's interesting because I have never actually tried know. I've never actually put her into artwork. And I think for me, it's because she is the inspiration, or she is the vehicle that I use to be inspired. Mm-hmm. A bit like Dave's muse, I guess.
Yes.
And yeah. I hadn't really thought about it like that before, but I believe that she really is my muse, mm-hmm. in as much as she's quite harsh. she's not a light character in any way, shape or form. And she kind of drives you. She's quite
an unusual goddess to have for a muse, I would have thought.
Yes, she's a hard taskmaster, but I like that. I mean, I've never been known for doing anything easily in my life. and generally, I need a kick up the rear end to get myself motivated.
So she's perfect for you,
she's
really.
She's absolutely. and long may she be there for me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And on that note, let's listen to The Cauldron Born from Dave's album of the same name.
Sunset, moon, rise, and see how the land is bathed in silver hue. You feel so lonely. Come with me and let me show there are others just like you, who feel the powers of earth, sea and sky, of dragon and fairy and shades of the night. Hear the call of our ancestors of blood and bone, of womb and tomb and standing stone. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this dark and cold, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. See the man alone on a hill, his arms raised high. Chanting words, a charm, a spell of power, a witch's rune. He calls to the powers of earth, sea and sky, of dragon and fairy and shades of the night. He calls to his ancestors of blood and bone, of standing stone. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew, and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. A charm of silver, the gypsy said when he was just 17. I'll tell you every thread and turn, if there to be seen. She took his hands, tracing the lines, searching for patterns and looking for signs. Your life a construction, one day you will see. To the dream, lady, stir
birds and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. This hill, our shadows are cast by the moon. Chanting words, our charm, our spell of power, our witch's rune. We call to the powers of earth, sea and sky, of dragon and fairy and shades of the night. We call to our ancestors of blood and bone, of womb and tomb and standing stone. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. Oh lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing your spell. Deep within this darkened hall, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. Come and taste of the cauldron's brew and magic she will give to you. You will dance in the eye of the storm, your Ceridwen's children, the cauldron born. You're the cauldron born, cauldron born. Oh, we're the cauldron born, cauldron born. Oh, we're the cauldron born.
Dave, we've noticed that when you've been playing on stage, you tend to use several guitars.
Yes.
And a small thing that looks like a small guitar. It's probably a mandolin
and,
or something.
And a harp.
It is a mandolin. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And a harp's in there somewhere. We've
I've
seen
once
him play.
Seen you play a harp. Yeah, so you play an awful lot of instruments. Mm. Do you have a particular brand loyalty or?
Not really.
Make it good. We're getting money for this.
Yeah. it's all to do with the sound at the
right,
end of the day.
Right. It's not just pick up whatever's available. You look for something for its sound.
But then I heard the sound that I wanted from a guitar. So I guess I have got a certain amount of brand loyalty because Mr. Denver, who we've already discussed, and also Doogie McLean and various other people all play Taylor guitars, which are an American brand. And they are about, for an acoustic guitar, they're about the closest I've ever heard to a steel-strung harp. They're very twinkly. Mm-hmm. They've not got much of a bottom end.
They're bright.
They're bright, yes. And so you, when they're played and they're finger-style guitar, they can sound quite harp-like, and I love that. So I play a Taylor, and I also have an Evasion, which was my first sort of proper guitar.
Yeah.
Got a Takamine as well. I've got Simon and Patrick 12 string. Yeah.
We'll get all of these in.
Please don't advertise over the internet.
You don't have to mention the names.
And I've got a mandolin.
But I'm guessing the reason you have different ones on stage is you've got them in different tunings.
That's exactly it. When I travel and I play overseas, I only take one guitar. What I do then is I
stop and say, hang on, talk amongst yourselves while I retune.
No, what I tend to do is I tend to craft the set so that half of the set is regular tuning and the second half of the set is in DAD, GAD, and D modal tuning.
Although I have seen you steal other people's instruments before now.
So. Oh, yeah, I'll do it. Nothing's safe. But yeah, the first instrument I learned was the guitar, and I was taught by an Irish folk musician who didn't read music, and he basically used to sit me down and play a D chord and then say, that's the shape. He'd draw it in a you know, book, but I bring you brook. He was Irish as well, Tim O'Leary, and basically he would tune my ear and say, that's what a D sound, shut your eyes, this is the D, you know, now this is a G, what's that, you know, and basically he trained my ear. I still can't read music to this day. And so I will have a go at anything with strings on it that is either plucked or strummed.
Okay.
I did have a go at a fiddle because I thought, well, it's got strings on it. It can't be that hard.
Sure.
But that is the product of a twisted mind. You know, after that experience, you know.
Mean that, Sam. He really doesn't mean that.
I have such respect for fiddle and violin.
We've got a wonderful fiddle player that I think in a show that we've just had.
Yes.
You should have heard some of her music.
Yeah.
She's brilliant.
Right, yeah, she's wonderful. So it was her I was apologising to.
Well, no, it was a backhanded comment because it's far beyond me, you know. I mean, I listen to that and I just think, you know, okay, so you get a mandolin and you put it under your chin and you play it with a bow of horsehair.
Oh, dear.
Where did that what is that all about?
I don't know.
So on the subject of instruments, Kerry, what's your favourite medium to work with?
Blimey.
Doris Stokes? Sorry, start that one again. I apologise.
To be honest, I love working in 3D. Clay is the medium that I feel I am able to manipulate most into the ideas that are in my head. However, I do love so many different mediums. I love pyrography or poker work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just working with the wood and working with fire, which is kind of my...
Your thing, isn't it?
My thing. I love, yes. And pencil work I do love very much. And then kind of the lesser degrees, watercolour and that kind of thing. But for me, the most magical is working with clay.
It's wonderful, isn't it? There's nothing quite like it.
Well, you use all of the elements. Mm-hmm. I mean, you use the earth, you use water, you use air, and, you know, you use inspiration, fire for the transformation.
For the kiln.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole, and spirit, you know, to kind of intuit or bring through those ideas.
You certainly do come up with some absolutely beautiful figurines. I'm in love with them all.
Yes. So we've been noticing from your Facebook and Twitter appearances and things like that you've been all over the bloody world. But you've been all over the place recently. You've been to Europe. You've been to Australia. You're planning, I think, to go to the USA.
Yeah.
Out of all those, which are your favourite places to go?
Oh, that's another hard one. The favourite places to go.
And you perform a lot in the UK, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say I've got a favourite place to go.
Because the moment you do, everyone else is going to be offended. So
and also, you know, I'm a Gemini, so I've just, the moment I make up my mind that one thing's the best.
2 minutes
else,
later.
2 minutes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's an adventure, you know. It's just the whole thing is an adventure, and
sure.
And it's a dream as well. I have to say that this is the dream that I had when I was 8 years old when I started to play the guitar. And, you know, it's taken me amount of years
absolutely.
to actually be doing it, you know.
10 years, that's not a long time.
Only 10
is it?
Years, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm only 18
absolutely.
Now. Yeah, I've got so much ahead of me. Who would have thought such life experience so young?
This is a point where I should take a photo.
Two blokes spilling a load of...
So I think the first overseas thing I did was was America in 2006. I played in Alabama. And that was just an amazing step for me. And since then, I've played in Germany and the Czech Republic and Austria. And like you say, I've been over to Australia. And Australia,
that's the other side of the world.
That's like
a long
way away.
It's a very long way.
And what was amazing was to go to Australia and find audiences there who knew the words to my song.
Of course they do. You were just saying how catchy they are.
It's mind-blowing when you actually think about it, isn't it?
It really is. It was amazing. Fantastic, you know. Yeah.
Do you have specific set lists for different places? When you were down under, did you have a set list that you think, well, these guys don't like these songs?
I always try and put a set list together, but often the audience will dictate it to go in a different direction.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I can think, that would be a nice one to follow that. For instance, you know, the moment people get up and they want to dance, you think, well, I want you to stay with this vibe, so we'll keep you dancing.
And as kind of letting you guys know that, having been privileged to have actually seen Dave perform live, there is something that is a communication that goes on in his shows.
Yeah, definitely.
There's some kind of communication from him as the artist and you as the audience, and you're not separate.
No. No, you feel like you're involved with his performance.
I can't put words to it, Dave, but there...
It's called the fact that I can't stop waffling.
There is a kind of magic, really.
It's more than that. You bring people with you. You lift them up. Mm. No, it's true.
But I think, odd, but true.
Yeah.
I do think that part of the Bardic tradition is that communication, and the music is one form. But people, in fairness, can stick on their stereo and hear my music. You know, they don't have to see me play live.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So if you then see the person live, you want to feel that engagement. You want to get to know them. And, you know, I mean, I'll always be out back, you know, at the end of the show, meeting people and giving hot hugs because I'm so, you know...
smelly and sweaty like that. Absolutely.
You know, that's what it's all about to me. It is about that connection. Otherwise, there's no point. You may as well just listen to the CD. You know?
Yeah.
It's all about that human connection. Yeah.
Very much so. Mm. Yes.
So tell us, where are you playing in America this year?
I'm lucky enough to be going to the Pagan Spirit Gathering in Salem, Missouri, which is over the summer solstice.
Right. That means we're going to miss you for the summer solstice. Oh, dear.
Yes. For the first time ever, I'm not going to be around for the... Well, we're neither of us are going to be around for our open at the Long Man of Wilmington. Mm. Yeah, so it's the Pagan Spirit Gathering. It's organised by a group called Circle Sanctuary, and they're very well known in the States. Facilitated by a woman called Selena Fox, and I've known about them for ages. Yeah.
She's got quite a few books, hasn't she?
That's it. Yeah, and they run a magazine called Circle Magazine, and they're right in the thick of the pagan world in the States, and I contacted a lot of pagan festivals, and I said, I'm getting so much hassle from people to come and play in the States. Can I come and play your festival? And some of them kind of said, well, you know, we can't do that or whatever. Others didn't write back, but Circle Sanctuary instantly just said yes.
They knew when they were onto a good thing. That's what's going on.
And so really excited about getting back. And there's also a chance that after Circle Sanctuary, after that PSG concert and that week, could be heading back to Georgia and playing in a one-off gig in Atlanta as well.
Okay, so if people would like tickets for these, where would they go?
I'm not entirely sure of the website, but if they put Pagan Spirit Gathering into Google, they'll find the place to get that tickets for that. And I know that that is now booking.
Okay, good.
And if they want to find out about the other concerts, obviously my website, paganmusic.co.uk, I've got a gig schedule there. I've also got an email. Just drop me a line, you know, just write.
Brilliant, thank you.
And say, are you ever coming here? Or if you see the Facebook page. I mean, there's many ways getting hold of me.
Dave's also on Twitter, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah, Twitter.
And all of these contact details we'll make sure are in the show notes, including the Pagan Spirit Gathering one.
Brilliant, brilliant, yeah.
So that people
really
can find you.
To it. Yeah, you can't wait to get back to the States.
Great stuff. Great stuff. When you rehearse to go on stage, do you rehearse at home?
I don't rehearse.
You don't rehearse?
No.
Oh.
No, I never rehearse. The only thing I do is if I haven't played for a while and I've got a concert where I'm using a PA system or something like that, amplification, I will set up my PA in the room and just get my voice back in, because there's a very different thing about singing through a microphone than just singing, you know, unmiked, you know, that kind of thing.
Projections.
That's it, yeah. It's just a different skill in doing that, and I will do that. Other than that, I don't rehearse. It's all of the banter you hear, all of that is just
impromptu.
It's just something, you know, and I do get myself into the trouble sometimes. I find myself digging into a hole and I'll just have a laugh and think, you know, what can
okay,
I do?
Okay, I've mucked that one up.
Yeah, then. That's it.
Yeah. At least with our show, the outtakes can be going somewhere.
Well, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That show, but I don't tend to worry too much about it.
So, Kerry, how do you cope with all this? Because you accompany Dave, don't you, on gigs?
Yeah, I'm the driver, the roadie, the kind of...
She's a very attractive roadie, I might add.
I can't believe
he gets you lumping those great big speakers around.
Well, no, I draw the line at something. But, I mean, quite often when we go, it's like Dave needs to kind of be in his head and kind of preparing and stuff for the gig. Mm-hmm. So, and quite often... Part of my enjoyment of being there is actually meeting with people and kind of talking and a lot of questions and things about, you know, Dave and stuff, which, you know, it's very groovy to feel that involved and just to meet so many people around and talk and hear their stories and hear their culture and it's all part of that fantastic journey, you know, it all feeds into...
It's not just a place, is it?
No,
it's
not.
People
it's
and culture
people.
And...
Yeah, and how everybody... It's about bringing everybody together in a commonality that just kind of dispenses with all of the normal protocols because you're talking the same language.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very heart-to-heart experience, which is fabulous.
Now, you do occasionally take some of your artwork along to sell at these gigs, don't you?
Yeah, people can't get away from me.
I just wanted to let people know that if you want to actually see Kerry and meet her, if you turn up at one of Dave's gigs, you'll get the bonus of listening to Dave sing, but you'll get to meet Kerry and you'll meet her in person and you'll see her artwork and she's fairly amazing. So if you're close by, do go and meet her.
Mm. That's very true.
Oh, she's blushing like mad here.
That's the heat in the studio.
It's very warm in here.
Very warm in here. Very warm in here.
Terribly warm.
So he hasn't got you up on stage singing with him yet,
oh,
then?
Good God, no.
Right, that won't be happening. What events do you think so far in your life have really triggered major changes in your music, do you think, or inspired pieces of music?
Right, okay. Particular songs I can think of. Obviously, I think that being taught by an Irish folk musician and having a parents who were into that kind of music, was a huge, obviously, a huge influence on me. Really the inspiration behind the songs are often very spur of the moment. If I'm like Kerry with writing songs, if I don't get it out and on the paper and finished in one hit, the song will
not happen.
Written. It won't be written, you know. And
do you go somewhere special for inspiration?
Like, yes.
I'd imagine that you'd go to the hills or the woods or...
Yeah. I mean, often it comes from just literally reading a book or being out in the woods or something like that. I have had one particularly bad episode of writer's block where I just could not seem to write a thing. I, and And the more you try, I don't know if there are any writers listening to this, but they'll know. The more you try in a situation like that, the worse it gets.
Sure.
And in a way, you've actually got to let it go and just allow the Arwen to flow again, you know? And so in a situation like that, we will go off somewhere.
Change your environment.
Often
it'll lose the anxiety.
For me, it'll be moorland, you know.
Moorland.
It'll be down to the great southwest.
Yeah.
And on that occasion, we took ourselves off to Dartmoor. Mm. And I just took my guitar and I sat within two sites on Dartmoor. I sat within Merivale Stone Circle, which is a complex of stone circles and stone rows. It's a beautiful space, Merivale Stone Circle. And there in that stone circle, that's where I wrote The Hills That Hollow. So in that song, there is an old circle of stones that stands on the moor. Every moss-covered face tells the secrets
and
of ancient lore. That's Merivale Stone Circle. The tors stand as guardians, witnessing to the rites of nature's gods.
Ah, oh, brilliant.
And the tors are all of the tors around there. And that got that flowing.
Yeah.
And on the same day, I went off to Grimspound, which is an Bronze Age settlement. Again, I mean, within almost a stone's throw of Merivale. And that is the most magical place. Me and Kerry did a druid initiation there one night within the remains of the old roundhouse at Grimspound. And you know, that's where the song Grimspound came from, you know,
sure.
Sitting within that old roundhouse that is there. And, you know, there are signposts to Merivale, but if you want to know where Grimspound is, you'll need an OS map. And it's not that far off the beaten track, but... it's awesome. You can feel the ancestors are still there. They haven't gone.
Probably Google Maps.
dude!
No, go there.
You'll find it on Google Maps, but go there in person.
You mentioned there a druid ceremony. You're well known, and both you and Kerry are well known as druids.
Mm.
How does that influence your music?
Oh, it is the music, you know. It's the way you look at the world, and you know, druidry is a way of life to both of us, and it influences almost everything we do, you know. So you know, it is what we do with our lives, you know, from the artwork to the songs to the, like, you know, the open rituals at the Longman, which, you know, we're quite happy to let people know about. You know, we've been this. Spring equinox coming up will be our 10th year.
10 years?
Yeah, 10th year of continuous open rituals.
That's astounding. Well done, guys.
We haven't missed one. Rain, shine, snow, everything. People have been there to celebrate for 10 years. That's a long time.
That's lovely.
And, you know, that started for us as a way of giving back to the community, because... You know, that people have held open rituals and things within the pagan community, but the success, I think, of those are the fact that people know that no matter what, they will be there.
Yeah.
You know, and they have been there, you know, and they continue to be there.
And it's people of all paths. It's not limited just to druidry. It's any path are welcome. And it's about celebrating the turning of the wheel together and celebrating.
Yeah.
It's not po-faced. We like,
no, it's very, very relaxed.
Yeah, the mirth and reverence in equal measure is really the Gorset's motto.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. And we're able to celebrate the turning of the year, which is what you meant by the wheel.
Yes.
Which is, it's amazing. There's no real way to describe it, but when you get a lot of people, you don't have to know each other, but Kerry and Dave have a way of pulling people together. And it's
not long before you do know each other, though.
No, it's very true. You're all of a sudden laughing as a crowd. Mm. And it's quite a unique experience, to be honest. And I think they do a fabulous job.
They do.
Yeah.
They do, yeah.
So
yeah.
On the subject of druidry, much of your artwork is beautiful, and it's obviously inspired by your beliefs.
Completely, yes. Absolutely.
How would you say that druidry has influenced you? Were you always a druid? Ever since you've been an artist, have you been a druid, or were you an artist before you were a druid? Or
artwork has been something that I have I just actually don't ever remember not having a pencil in my hand or, you know, doing, creating or working with something to whatever degree. I was always, as a child, out in nature and influenced and never happier than when I was immersed in nature. And it wasn't really until kind of my late 30s that that I actually had a name for it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, you know, I started to find people on a spiritual path and they had different names for these paths. And I kind of found Druidry and went,
a lot of people say it's like coming home, don't they?
Completely. It is. And it's kind of, and then you've got some, once you've got a name that kind of assembles, you know, represents what your core beliefs are, and you find that there are other people who are into the artwork, into the music, the way of thinking, and you suddenly go, oh,
it's not just me.
I am not on my own. Yeah. I am not completely bonkers.
Yeah.
Only slightly bonkers.
There are lots of other bonkers.
There are lots of other bonkers. Absolutely. It's not a lonely path anymore.
What really intrigues me about Druidry is, of course, its links to Celtic mythology. Because the Druids came from the Celts, or how do you see the links there?
Well, I think Celt
it's such an umbrella term, isn't it?
It's a very umbrella term, and it's not strictly accurate, but it's become an easy term to use for it's essentially Northern European various tribes, and it's an art form as much as anything that's travelled through and become very cohesive. But the stories from all of these lands, the kind of ideas and the songs that have threaded through everyone's lives and given us a continuity of experience, of life experience from the ancients to now, is really, well, you can call it Druidry, you can call it folklore, you can call it whatever you like. But when you connect into those things, the words that your ancestors have spoken, for me personally, it shortens the time. It folds time and space. Mm-hmm. And you can identify with those people as much, probably more even for me, than I can with everybody around me.
That's
now.
That's absolutely brilliant. What a great way of describing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's your roots coming up
absolutely.
And out of your heart into your everyday life now.
It's all of that stuff. It is your roots. It is. Steve Knightley does do a good song called Roots, and it's all about people not singing their folk songs and not singing their... You're losing your roots. You can't survive without that.
No.
Says, without our stories or our songs, how will we know where we came from?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's it, you know.
Yeah. I think on that very wise note, we'll bring this to an end and say, Dave, thank you very much. Kerry, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much
indeed. Thank you for inviting me to the forest.
Yeah, it's been lovely to have you in the forest.
Wonderful. They still whisper.
fires are burning, the young they are learning from the elders of the tribe. The brands they are lifted, and names they are gifted, and the initiated are welcomed inside. The wind and the rain, they still whisper its name, and the name that they whisper, Grimm's Pound. And the wind and the rain, they still whisper its name, and the name that they whisper, Grimm's Pound.
Was Grimm's Pound. You can find that on Dave's second album, which is called The Hills, They Are Hollow. And just before they made their way out of the door, Dave very kindly gave us a signed copy of his latest album, Tales from the Crowman, to give away as a competition prize.
So we thought, as we discussed a lot of Welsh mythology in that interview, the competition question should be, which female character from the Mabinogion is associated with horses?
I think I know this one. Just send an email with Dave Competition in the subject line and with your name and your answer as the email content to GaryandRuth@CelticMythPodShow.com by, shall we say, June the 1st?
Yep, June the 1st, because that's good.
Mm-hmm. And we'll announce the winner in the following show.
Before we finish off here, we'd like to thank both Dave and Kerry for allowing time in their busy schedules for this super interview.
Oh, it was great. Thank you so much, guys. We had a lot of fun.
And we really hope that you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
You can find links to both Dave and Kerry's websites, as well as much more detail about these lovely people in the show notes for this episode.
Well, sadly, that's all we have time for.
It is.
And we really hope that you've enjoyed the show.
So, shall we let Dave play us out?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Let's have his rousing song, Spirit of Albion, the title track from his album of the same name.
isle so fair, an isle so green, known by many names. Feel the pulse of the land, the blood boils within your veins. Someone go down to the holy well and raise the spirits there. Lay a feather on a stone with a flame and a lock of hair. The crane, the wolf, the bear and the boar no longer dwell upon these shores. You say the goddess and god have gone, but I tell you they live on, for in the cities and hills and in circles of stone, the voices of the old ways, the spirit of Albion is calling you home. From Man O'Weathen's crashing sea to the moor and the highland glen, fairy hills, home of the she, to the veins of the broad and the fen. Someone go down to the holy trees of oak and ash and thorn, utter a charm in the verse of three, till the summer king is born. The crane, the wolf, the bear and the boar no longer dwell upon these shores. You say the goddess and god have gone, but I tell you they live on, for in the cities and hills and in circles of stone, the voices of the old ways, the spirit of Albion is calling you home. The white horses carved into the hills, walk to the hanging stones,
to the hanging stones.
Bow to the might of Sir Nabus's height, fill the peace in the ancestors' homes.
In the ancestors' hearts.
Someone go down to Wilmington, where the giant guards the way. Step into the other world, into the womb, where centuries pass like a day. The crane, the wolf, the bear and the boar no longer dwell upon these shores. You say the goddess and god have gone, but I tell you they live on, for in the cities and hills and in circles of stone, the voices of the old ways, the spirit of Albion is calling you home.
And that was the title track from Dave's album, The Spirit of Albion.
Brilliant. We hope you'll join us for the next show. But until then,
Slongerful.
Soundcheck one, sounding good. Dave, would you mind?
I would just like to say thank you, Gary and Ruth, for inviting me here to the Celtic Myth Pod Show.
Oh, yes.
On the red and black one. You're listening to...
A bit more game.
Celt FM.
One, two. Hello, hello, hello. I've run out of funny things to say, so I'll just say 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Thank you, Harry. Would you like to do a similar?
Okay, hello, 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 hello.
Okay, give me a bit more gain. Where's Kerry's?
A bit more talent. Could I have a bit more talent on mine, please? maybe sound gorgeous and sexy.
Of course, I have a knob here just for that.
That would be lovely.
I was going to say.
Madam!
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. Or you can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Kulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.